All this week, we'll be bringing you the stories of forgotten, underappreciated, or just plain interesting women in American history. Today's subject is Jane Franklin Meacham, Benjamin Franklin's sister, and what she can tell us about the lives of women in 18th century America. Joining us now is New Yorker staff writer and professor of American history at Harvard, Jill Lepore. Welcome back to our show.
Thanks.
Jane Franklin Meacham and her brother Benjamin were close throughout their lives, and many of their letters were saved. What can she tell us about what life was like for women in colonial New England?
I think she can tell us a great deal. Franklin wrote more letters to his sister Jane than he wrote to anyone, and Franklin was a great letter writer. He was a sort of quintessential 18th century man of letters. His sister was barely literate, as most women were in the 18th century. Boys, as children, were taught to read and write, and girls were taught to read and to stitch. So most women didn't know how to write. They really knew only how to read. That was necessary for their subservience and their submission to God and reading the Bible. But Franklin, who was 6 years older than his youngest sister, there were 17 kids, and he was the youngest boy, she was the youngest girl. I think he helped teach his sister how to write, partly because of his own passion for reading and writing. And they maintained this lifelong correspondence. Their correspondence lasted for 63 years. And she wrote back to him some of the most extraordinary and least read letters in all of American literature, chronicling just the kind of ordinary minutiae, daily minutiae of a woman's life. Like Franklin would write to her about how he had met the king, and she would write back how she was in the middle of a great wash. There's this way in which she has this, she's an incredibly lively mind, and she has, you know, she's raising 12 children, then she raises her grandchildren, she takes care of her parents. She never leaves home. She lives in the same house pretty much her whole life. And yet, she just thirsts for knowledge, and she has this passion for reading. She reads everything that Franklin writes, and she writes to him with her ideas. And it's just so gripping to see this very ordinary woman living this ordinary life, but with this quite amazing mind, wrestling with the great ideas of the age and duking it out with Benjamin Franklin, arguing with him about these things.
Where did she live?
She lived in Boston. They were born in Boston into a fairly poor family, a Chandler. Their father was a soap boiler and a candle maker, and Franklin ran away when he was 17 and left her behind. She got married when she was 15, and she you know, Franklin's life is this great American story, rags to riches. It's the kind of allegory for all of America, and her story, though, which is rags to rags, is another kind of allegory.
Well, she married, you say, at 15. Was that typical at the time?
No, it was incredibly early. The average age of marriage in their own family was 24, and that was about the average age of marriage for men and for women at the time in the 18th century. She was probably pregnant when she got married, as a lot of women were, and she had no choice, and she had one child after the next.
Although she had 12, as you say, but a number of them didn't survive.
A lot of them died in childhood and infancy, as many children did, and some of them grew up and had their own children only to die as young people. I'm pretty sure that what most of the people in her family died of was tuberculosis. Her doctor's medical notes, his medical notebooks and his case notes actually survived kind of amazingly. Her doctor was a correspondent with Franklin. She kind of had sort of special treatment in Boston because she was Franklin's sister. The more famous Franklin became, the more interested people were in meeting the sister of his. So there's a kind of extraordinary trail of evidence.
What about it? Go ahead.
It's so special to have someone who led, in some ways, a very ordinary life, but because she was Franklin's sister, there's a huge amount of her life record that survives. That's really, really unusual for someone in such poverty to have left such a fascinating paper trail.
Now, why such poverty? Benjamin Franklin was a big success. Didn't he just help her out sometimes?
Sure, he did. And it's kind of a quite moving thing about their story was how much he did help her. I mean, a lot of Franklin's success is mythical. I mean, Franklin was really invested in telling the story of himself as a self-made man, right? That's the story that he decides to tell for very particular historical reasons. But Franklin was helped along by many people all of his life. There's a great system of patronage that operates in the 18th century, and he helped out a lot of his members of his family. So one of the things he most tried to do was to rescue her son. One of her sons, she named after him, her son's name is Benjamin Meacham. He becomes a printer. Franklin sets him up as an apprentice, sets him up with a printing shop 3 different times because this Benjamin Meacham cannot stay out of debtor's prison. He cannot make a go at the trade, as many, you know, like just like today, many small businesses fail, right? More small businesses fail than succeed. More tradesmen fail than succeed. Benjamin Meekham, though, happened to be a madman. There was insanity somehow in the Meekham family. And one of the things that's kind of fascinating about the story of Franklin's attempt to help Jane's family was how much he's really struggling with this kind of congenital insanity that dooms many of her children.
And her husband as well, Edward Meekham.
Yeah, also kind of loses his mind.
So when you wrote about her recently in the New York Times, you said that the lives of Jane Franklin Meekham and Benjamin Franklin tell an 18th century tale of two Americas. Obviously, she could not become a self-made woman because it was a time of institutionalized inequality.
Yeah, and you can also really see in their lives how much struggling Franklin is doing to establish the kinds of public institutions that can help lift up people from poverty. You know, it's kind of funny that Franklin is kind of this paragon of American capitalism, as he, you know, wrote this essay, The Way to Wealth, and it's kind of a businessman's manifesto. It was taken to be so by, you know, Carnegie in the 19th century and then forward. But Franklin established lending libraries so that people could read and acquire knowledge, and, you know, was a founder of the first public hospital, the Pennsylvania Hospital, in 1754. What Franklin was so committed to was building the kinds of public institutions that could actually address and alleviate the kind of cycles of poverty that his own family came from and that he knew very intimately in watching the fate of his sister and his, all of his nieces and nephews.
What did Jane do to survive?
She did a lot of things. She was incredibly resourceful and canny and shrewd. And she had, you know, tremendous friends, and she decided very early on when her husband kind of seemed to be losing his mind and fell into a great deal of debt that she needed to take care of the family. She took in boarders for a long time. She turned her house into a boarding house. She started a business. She made hats, and she and her daughter stitched hats for the wealthy ladies in town. One of the funnier parts of her correspondence with Franklin is the time she's, you know, making all these fancy bonnets after the latest London fashion when Franklin is in London arguing against the Stamp Act before Parliament. The Bostonians start boycotting English goods and anything that even looks like an imported good because they're, you know, trying to be all patriotic with their homespun and their anti-luxury. Seriously, I picked a really bad time to go into business. Could you stop promoting the boycott? Then her business kind of failed. But she's quite resourceful in that regard. Her boarding house is where members of the Massachusetts Assembly stay when they're themselves debating the independence movement. So she follows politics very avidly and becomes a really important correspondent of a number of different people.
We're talking about Jane Franklin Meekham, the sister of Benjamin Franklin, with Jill Lepore, who is a professor of American history at Harvard, also staff writer at The New Yorker and author of a number of books. Was Jane particularly involved in or supportive of the American Revolution?
She was. She was, in some ways, a pacifist, as I think if we were to do more and better research into women's political views in the 18th century, we'd find a lot more pacifism. She's quite distressed at the arrival of the British troops in Boston in 1768, partly for the political reasons. She's opposed to the standing army in the way that the Patriots are, the kind of matter of political philosophy. But she also just knows that women and children are getting, you know, kind of beaten up on the street, and it's kind of streets become more dangerous for the dependents that she's trying to take care of. The things like the Boston Massacre are distressing for her, not purely from the political argument that would activate people who wrote about it more publicly, but more in a kind of private sense. She just fears for the well-being of her children, and then once the war begins, she loses a son during war in the early years of the war in New England in 1776. Another son disappears during the Battle of Trenton. So she's opposed to war, as many women are, not because she's opposed to political independence, but because she just knows that the suffering that her family will endure.
Her brother wrote a pioneering autobiography. Did he talk about her much in the book?
No, he didn't. And it's interesting because the very last years of their lives, when they're maybe closest in terms of the frequency of their correspondence, as they The last 25 years of life, they're the last of the Franklin children who are alive of the 17. There's just the two of them left, and they write to each other almost constantly. But they can never see one another again because Franklin suffers from gout and stones, and his sister is quite ailing as well. She's in Boston. He's in Philadelphia in the last years of their lives. And they write and write and write, and on these years, he's finishing his autobiography. He never once mentions her. She lives 4 years after he does. I think there's a pretty good chance she read the autobiography and discovered that he never once mentioned her. A lot of what Franklin does in the telling of the story of his life is remove any hint of scandal. So her family is associated with this insanity. The letters between Franklin and the insane son of Jane Meekham were all destroyed. I think that was partly done by Franklin, maybe done by his early biographers, to protect him from any implication in that story and in the fairly scandalous affairs of Benjamin Meekham.
Well, much of her life sounds incredibly sad. Is that what you took away from studying her?
I do find it incredibly sad. I think I find especially sad the ways in which her life was erased, not so much by Franklin, but by his earlier biographers. Jared Sparks, who was one of the first of Franklin's biographers and the first professor of American history at Harvard, destroyed some of Jane's letters, I believe, and when he collected Franklin's letters. And there's a fair amount of chicanery involved in propping up the Franklin story by wiping out from his past people that he was intimately involved with, including a lot of women that he was intimately involved with. And I find that very sad. But I do think that there's something quite heroic in this woman with very limited education acquainting herself with the great ideas of the age. There's this lovely letter she writes near the end of her life when she's been reading some political philosophy by the English radical minister Richard Price, and he writes about how many children, how many eggs a spider must lay for one to survive. And she takes incredible comfort in this, that she's had all these children and at this point only one is left. And of their whole family of these 17 Franklin children, only Franklin really ever escaped poverty. And maybe it takes that many. And maybe these losses are bearable because there is a kind of march forward. There's something kind of beautiful in the way she finds comfort in this account of Providence. But she also, I think, there's something quite inspiring in the way she gets angry at her fate. She writes at length about Price talking about how many thousands of Isaac Newtons there must be out there in the world who have suffered in poverty and obscurity merely for want of education. I think there's something utterly profound about this revolutionary spirit of equality finding its way into the mind of this quite obscure woman, which really begins to think about what it means to live in a world where we demand equality and that requires equality of education.
Jill Lepore's last book was The Whites of Their Eyes, The Tea Party's Revolution and the Battle Over American History. When will your next one be coming out?
I have a book out this month called The Mansion of Happiness, A History of Life and Death, and I have another book coming out in the fall called The Story of America.
So we'll be seeing a lot of you. Jill Lepore is a professor of American history at Harvard, also a staff writer at The New Yorker. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank